the truth about money, where it comes from, uncovering the truth. And once you go down that hole and certain things click, it's very hard to unclick and go back to believing the lies that, you know, we've been fed our entire lives.
So very welcome, Tony. I'm very happy that you're here with me, because sometimes I feel like initially I started that podcast to talk to a lot of Bitcoiners out there, but in the last couple of episodes it has been everything but no Bitcoiners. So I'm super happy that you're here with me. You're a Bitcoiner, and we will have an awesome conversation about education, decentralized society, maybe even decentralized systems. Very welcome.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be here. Yes, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I think it should be a very interesting one. Lots of things to cover.
For sure. Nice. Tell me a bit more about yourself. You are in the Bitcoin space. Since when? How did that happen? How did you fall into the rabbit hole? What exactly are you doing there?
Well, for full transparency, I fully discovered Bitcoin in 2012, but like many dummies back then, you know, ignored it for the first time because, you know, well, didn't take it too seriously. But you never make, you know, a mistake like this twice. So when I really got into the Bitcoin, deep down the Bitcoin rabbit hole, was, I guess, a little bit over 5 years ago, and doing, you know, proper research to find out, you know, the truth about money, where it comes from, uncovering the truth. And once you go down that hole and certain things click, it's very hard to unclick and go back to believing the lies that, you know, we've been fed our entire lives. Now, professionally speaking, I come from about 25 years of cybersecurity, encryption, and privacy. It's what I've been doing, you know, for the longest time. And I bring a lot of this knowledge into the Bitcoin space because, you know, since Bitcoin is technology, at the end of the day, there's a lot of these elements that interface with it that not many people seem to be giving much attention to now, possibly because they're not taking Bitcoin too seriously yet, maybe because of the price, you know, it's still at 27K. But I can assure you, once Bitcoin goes parabolic, you know, a lot of people are going to be stressing out and panicking about this to ensure that anything that they have Bitcoin related is bulletproof and airtight. And this is what, you know, I try to assist with at this point in time when there is no need to panic yet, you know. And that's what the Bitcoin Way, you know, the company I co-founded, that's our purpose, to fast track the onboarding of individuals and businesses into Bitcoin self-custody properly and securely. You know, so there's a lot of elements involved in this journey, you know, beyond just the basics. And we take you from point zero to 100 thoroughly, meticulously, patiently, to ensure that you can sleep well at night, and that you can use your Bitcoin as simply as a credit card, so that there's nothing to overwhelm you, nothing to bring up your anxiety levels. We'll handle all of this. And we remain, you know, on standby should anyone have any questions, whether it's on remote support, whether it's through private chat rooms that we create for every individual, so that we establish direct communications with them at all times. So that's essentially what we do here at the Bitcoin Way, and what I've been involved in for about 5 years now.
Nice. That is quite some time. I like it a lot. You mentioned self-custody, and mm-hmm. I like that term, because when we talk about education, it's almost the same way. I mean, it comes from a different perspective, point of view, but in the end, you are self-responsible. You have the self-custody for the education of your kids as well when you're falling into that decentralized education rabbit hole. So the more I engaged in the Bitcoin and unschooling space, the more I saw, okay, people who are into decentralized finance, they tend to love decentralized education and the other way around. So I see a lot of parallels there. And I see a lot of people, like, when they discover Bitcoin and they discover, okay, you said it's hard to unclick. And these people are like, when they discover Bitcoin and it's hard for them to unclick, the truth about finance. And finance has always something to do with, okay, following the money, education, who's funding universities. And you are going down that rabbit hole as well, and you can't unclick that. So it's hard for a lot of Bitcoiners out there to trust the government on finance, but to trust the government on education. So it doesn't make sense at all. So I really like that. And uncovering the truth, you mentioned that as well. And I think a lot of people who are falling into the unschooling Bitcoin rabbit hole, when they uncover that truth that maybe the education system is not that perfect place to be. And I really like that. It's not about changing the world. It's more about changing your own world, first of all, to help others to change their world. I really like that. Maybe you can tell me a bit more about your perception on decentralized lifestyles. Let's call it lifestyles, because I think it's too easy to call it decentralized education, decentralized finance, because I think it has to do, everything is connected.
It is all connected. And the more you become aware of how connected it is, the more it upsets, you know, a lot of people when they realize that they've been essentially living a lie. I know, you know, that was the case with me. The more I found out, you know, what was really going on, the more it upset me, and the more it drove me to learn more in order to warn others and help others, you know, avoid the same pitfalls. Now, the issue with decentralization is that it's a brand new concept. You know, it's we've never really had the concept of decentralization. It's never been taught. And when you realize that there's a reason why it's never been taught, it's because it's to keep you locked into a system that is not for your own benefit and own growth, but it's for the benefit of those behind the scenes controlling the money and the narrative. And that's you know, a critical point that people that get into Bitcoin, once they realize this, you know, then everything starts to make sense and unfold. And that's where the rabbit hole gets deeper and deeper to try to connect the dots to see how far back this goes. And when you realize how far back it goes, you know, that opens up, you know, even more questions and even more conversations. And the more answers you get, a normal person, you know, will feel cheated. You know, the fact that you have to work day and night for money that someone can print for free, okay, essentially stealing your value, your time, your energy. Now, in the beginning, when all this nonsense started, maybe it wasn't so apparent, but now we've reached the end of the line. You know, almost 100 years later, the cracks are so big that even the most clueless human being realizes that they can't afford much anymore, you know, and they're starting to ask, why can't I afford more anymore? And over the last 3 years, you know, with you know, the illegal lockdowns and everything that, you know, came about because of this, well, you know, that opened the eyes to a lot more individuals asking, you know, hold on a second, what the hell is going on here? And when you realize that there is no law per se that's being followed, that it's just a set of, I guess, legalized lawlessness by a group that believe that they have the right to play God and dictate what people, how people live their lives, you know, well, then not everyone's going to accept this. And this is what I see happening. More and more people are saying no. And how this is possible traditionally is because it's these same people controlling the money printer. So when you're printing money, you can do whatever you want. Life is free. You can fund wars, you can commit crimes, you can do whatever you want because there's no accountability, okay? And that cannot persist for too long because at some point, like where we're at today, people start asking questions. You start seeing nation state fail, you know, like we've seen Venezuela, Argentina, most recently Lebanon, you know, the complete hyperinflation destruction of the economy literally overnight. And, you know, the darkness that brings along with it, you know, in terms of how people cope, well, then, you know, you understand that this cannot go on. I mean, you cannot continue living your life like this. Money has been weaponized against individuals. It's been weaponized against countries. I mean, if the money has been weaponized against a country and people are being censored left and right for no legal reason other than somebody doesn't like what you're saying. How do you continue living in a world like this? It just doesn't make sense. Some folks may be okay with it, and that's their choice. But for most people that have any sense of dignity and value, they will reject this 100%. Whoever Satoshi Nakamoto is in 2008 to 2009, this person understood this. And he was like, I am sure this person must have been screwed somehow by the system so bad. He, she, they, nobody knows. But they must have been screwed so bad by the system that they decided enough is enough. And they decided to build a decentralized currency that no one can mess around with anymore. And they release it into the wild. And whoever he, she, they are did, you know, the world the most noble act by disappearing. The most powerful Houdini act in the history of mankind. They're gone. Okay? Whether they're still alive, nobody knows. Nobody really cares. It doesn't really matter at this point. Luckily, Bitcoin went unnoticed in its first years. Okay? Because technically, if anyone was paying attention to it in the same way they are today, they could have killed it because it was nowhere near the level of security and decentralization that it's at today. That's for sure. Fortunately, it passed. Fast forward 15 years later, here we are. It's so decentralized, so powerful, so secure that no one, at least that we know of, can stop it. And there are millions of eyes on the code, on the network, that chances of anything nefarious being allowed to occur, in my opinion, are almost zero. Okay. Bitcoin is the first time in history of Earth that we have an asset that every individual, one, absolutely needs. It's not optional. You need money to live. It's not like you're buying a chair. You know, you need money. And two, that you can actually own. No one can steal from you. No one can censor you. And no one can, you know, the only thing they can do is maybe trick you into giving it up or coerce you into giving it up. But there are security measures, you know, that can be put in place to mitigate these risks. Whether they like it, don't like it, it doesn't matter. 21 million from now to the end of time, it's done. Realistically, we don't even have 21 million because I think maybe 4 or 5 million have been lost to, you know, misplaced seed phrases, lost passwords, who knows, but they're gone. So that adds even more to the value of the scarcity of the asset for whoever's left on the network. But the key to this is self-custody. That means you need to own your coins. You cannot entrust any third party with them because at that point, you know, they're not in your control. And as we saw, you know, when you leave your money in the bank, most people are learning this the hard way, that the money in the bank is not yours. If that bank, for whatever reason, decides, I don't want to give it to you, they won't. And there's nothing you can do about it. Banks don't need to give you your money. Legally, when you sign up for a bank account, you have to go through this whole list of paperwork that they make you sign, right? Nobody actually reads it. But if you've read, you know, what's on these pieces of paper, it says that now you are, you know, putting your money in the hands of the bank and they owe you your funds back. So those that think that their assets are safe there, you know, if you ask the folks in Venezuela and Argentina and Lebanon, well, you know, they have a different ending to that story where they experienced literally in real time, 24 hours later, how quickly this lie manifests. You go to bed one night, you wake up the next day, it's gone. Regardless of your net worth, whether you're worth a dollar or a million, you're the same. You have nothing. So why would you continue wasting your time and energy working for something that, one, is controlled by someone else? Okay, that's one. Two, is debasing at an accelerating rate, as we can see, right? And three, can be taken away from you on a whim. They don't even have to give you a reason. They'll just take it away. Big personalities, Nigel Farage, I don't know, Andrew Tate, Russell Brand recently, all of these guys, what happened to them? Guilty until proven innocent. The complete opposite of what the legal system is about, right? So this goes back to the point that I was saying, that we are living in a world of legalized lawlessness by a mafia that thinks that they can do whatever they want. And this cannot be allowed to happen. This cannot be allowed to continue. Historically, there's been only one way to fight tyranny, historically. And that's you go to war. People kill each other, the strongest survive. Bitcoin, for the first time, offers a peaceful way to defund this bullshit. If you wanted to end most problems worldwide today, it's very simple. But it's so simple that most people ignore it. If everyone today decide, okay, I don't want to use fiat anymore, I'm going to go 100% into Bitcoin, within an hour, everything, most things financially are solved. All issues are gone. But that's like, obviously, a magical scenario that unfortunately will not happen. It will happen at one point. I don't know. Nobody has a crystal ball in terms of timeline. But I'm fairly certain that as things get progressively worse, as more and more people get screwed directly, because that's how people will react, is when they are affected. Not many people act on theory, like somebody telling them this is going to happen. Most people will not believe you. But when they get directly hit by whatever you were saying, then they're like, shit, okay, now what? Sometimes you have a way to fix it. A lot of times you don't. When your funds are gone or hyperinflated to nothing, it's too late. And depending on your stage in life, if you're a young person, strong individual, yes, you can rise up again, get back on your feet, build your life again. If you're close to retirement age, you're not going to do this. Or it's going to become extremely difficult to do this. Okay? This is the message that a lot of Bitcoiners are trying to put out there so that folks from all age groups become aware of this. Young folks seem to be easier to convince. A lot of the older folks are not. And I suspect it's because it's just too new for them. I mean, Bitcoin is technology. Most people are terrible at using a computer, let alone, doing self-custody. So when you tell someone, if you want to save your money, you're going to have to do a cold wallet, a node, this, they're going to look at you, like you just landed from Mars, and they'll have no clue where to start. And just the mere thought that knowing that if they make a mistake along the way, it's all gone, you've just lost them. So this is where a lot of education, becomes valuable. A lot of hand-holding becomes valuable. And a main major reason as to why we put together the Bitcoin way, so that if you don't want to do the technical work yourself, or maybe you don't want to watch YouTube videos, there's a lot of good content for free on the internet. Some great, great, valuable content is available on YouTube from a lot of amazing Bitcoiners. Anyone can watch them. There's cost you nothing. But most people that are not technical will not watch them. Because even if they do understand the video, they won't have the courage or self-confidence to actually do it, knowing that if they screw up anywhere along the line, there's a risk they lose their funds. That's what it fundamentally comes down to. So we come in here, we're like, fine, you don't want to do it, no problem. I will do it for you. I will explain it to you every single step of the way. I will show you where to press, what to check, what to write down, what to save. In complete privacy, you're like, I have no access to your data. I will just tell you, you will be my eyes and hands, and you will just follow all the steps. At the end of it, you should understand pretty much everything that we've done and be way more comfortable in finally understanding why this thing is so amazing, that you can finally have access to your money, do whatever it is that you want to do with it at any point in time, without any counterparty risk, but more importantly, without having to ask permission from anyone. If you work for your money, it's nobody's business to dictate how you spend it, when you spend it, how often you spend it. It's no one's business, but your own. If you don't want to tell anyone how much you have, that's your business. There's no one on earth that has the right to dictate, you know, the opposite of this. But the current system was designed for this, unfortunately. So if you remain in the legacy system, well, you have to play by these stupid rules. And as you can see, these rules are getting progressively worse and worse, with the final end game is to turn you into a complete slave, with a central bank digital currency tied to a digital ID that monitors your behavior like a two-year-old, 24/7, 365 days a year. So you have to ask yourself, is this the type of life I want to live? If you have kids, is this the type of life you want for them? So as far as I'm concerned, as a parent, you know, specifically I'm speaking as a man, if I have kids and I wanted to be a role model for my kids, especially if I have a son, I will never allow him to let himself be put in a position where he is under the control of someone else, especially when it comes to his money. You are born a free individual. No one has the right to take that away from you. If they try, you defend yourself. Whatever it takes, doesn't matter. So, what kind of message do you want to pass along to your kids if you have them? Again, it depends on what kind of life you want to live, right? So, a lot of commonality with Bitcoiners is that they understand that freedom is a non-negotiable term. Okay? No one has the right to tell me how to live my life. As long as I'm not infringing on anybody else's life or breaking any legitimate rules, not bullshit mandates made by an illegal group of psychopaths that think things should work a certain way. Those should not be acknowledged, should not be respected, should not even be listened to. Sadly, the last 3 years have shown how many people have blindly ignored what's fundamentally their right. But like I said, you have to go through the pain in order to learn from it. And now there's many more people that are aware of this and will not, hopefully, repeat the same mistakes of the past. This is how I see things. And Bitcoin plays a major role in this, because if you cannot screw around with the money, the chances of you being able to fund bad things comes to an end almost instantly. Because if you screw up, the money's gone. No one, you can't print it. So you are completely bankrupt at that point, or defunded significantly, depending on how stupid your decision was to begin with. So you can't go, you can't create wars. Who's going to fund it? There's 21 million. 75% are already owned by individuals, Bitcoiners, that do not believe in any of this bullshit. You think they're going to fund wars? Not a single Satoshi will be sent there. So if a corrupt nation state attempts to do this, you know, on a Bitcoin standard, they will fail. And so when you remove the power of money from those in a position to abuse it, holy shit, man, there's like a boatload of things that get resolved almost instantly. And, you know, progress flourishes. That's why, you know, you can see this almost like as a Renaissance 2.0. When this will manifest completely, I don't know. I'm hoping it'll happen in this lifetime, you know, so I can actually see it. The way things are going, I'm very optimistic about this. It doesn't even have to reach 100% global adoption for us to see this. I'd say maybe around maybe 15%, and we already see, you know, the amazing innovations that will, you know, come from all of this. And as they say, you lead by example. You know, you're living your life a certain way. Some people right now might think you're crazy. But at some point, when they see how bad their lives have become, then all of a sudden you're not so crazy. Then all of a sudden you'll start getting the phone calls from those that ignored you, that laughed at you, that mocked you, asking you, how did you do it? Can you help me? You know, we get a lot of these calls with Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin, a lot of people come into it, you know, for the wrong reasons initially, but it doesn't really matter because once they're in, enough of them learn, you know, like most people get in, number go up. They see the number go up. Oh my God, everybody gets excited. They want to go in. They're trying to make a quick buck, but they're still thinking about profit in fiat terms. And that's where the mistake is. It's like, you're selling the world's scarcest asset for toilet paper. Like, what are you doing? Like, what kind of profit do you think you just made? And you have to pay taxes on it like an idiot. So what are you doing? But, you know, when you've been taught this your whole life, you know, that's all you know. So you assume that's like normal now. And this is where the unlearning of the lies comes in. You have to be willing to unlearn the bullshit you've been taught and relearn the truth. Most people to this day are still hesitant towards this. One, because they're lazy, I think. And two, it's just too much information. So the key to orange pilling someone is not to hit them with a tsunami of your 10,000 hours of research that you've done. That won't work. You know, they will walk away within 30 seconds. You have to meet them where they are. And the way I do it is that I always approach it, you know, in a fun and casual way, you know, a fun conversation. Like, you pick up on something that they've said, like, ah, the supermarket, I can't buy anything anymore. You know, like, you pick up on it and you take the conversation bit by bit. When you're at restaurants, you know, I tease all the waiters. I'm like, I'm going to give you your tip, but I'm going to give it to you in a way you've never seen before. And then you're like, you know, and then I bring up Bitcoin, you know, some of them, you know, well, most of them will accept to do it, you know, especially if you can show it to them in under a minute, which is often what it takes. You know, it opens up more questions down the line. So you have to do it in a very casual way. And a lot of them, you know, once they get it, it doesn't have to be the next day. Sometimes it takes weeks. But at some point, they will call back and they're like, you know what, you came to a restaurant, you know, way back when you gave me a $10 tip. Now it's like $17. How do I use this? You know, like, those are the typical questions from normies. And so you get into a conversation and you take them down and then they start understanding. And then they start and they're like, hold on a second. For real? I'm like, yeah, for real. You know, and then the more questions come up. And then you go from being a complete newbie, then you have a cold wallet, then you have a node, and boom, before you know it, you're your own bank. And then they go tell their friends. And this is where, you know, the path to hyper-Bitcoinization goes slowly, then suddenly. But there's a lot of information, a lot of education still needed in that space. And I am very optimistic because, you know, the network effects of Bitcoin are at an all-time high. The Bitcoin hash rate is at an all-time high. The innovation coming from, you know, in the development space in Bitcoin will blow your mind. I mean, so many really, really good ideas are being built, you know, on a daily basis. And we try to keep on top of all of them. I mean, we test a lot of gear, you know, at the Bitcoin Ways so that we can filter out, you know, like the good, the bad, the reliable from the stable, to put them on a list to make recommendations. So when people ask us questions, you know, we can provide recommendations. We don't sell anything. Like, I don't sell any hardware or software, you know, at the Bitcoin Way. We are purely like a knowledge-based service. So there's no financial incentives to pick one over another. We have a certain set of criteria that religiously sticks to the Bitcoin ethos: open source or verifiable source only. No projects that do censorship on any level. No projects that work with chain analysis on any level. Any project of that sort is automatically disqualified. We either do it properly or just stay in fiat. That's what I tell them. I'm like, you're going to get into Bitcoin the proper way, or just stay where you are. There's no point. You know, you're wasting your time. You're going to sell when you don't have to sell. You're going to lose money, and then you're going to think the whole thing's a scam, which is not. It's because, you know, you didn't have the fundamental and proper understanding. You made an impulsive and emotional call. You made a mistake. That's what happened. So we try to avoid all of these mishaps by sticking to the core principles of what Satoshi Nakamoto intended for this technology. And that's the knowledge we pass along.
Really nice. You said some people are always thinking about profit in fiat terms. It's, I think, the same as measuring success in school. It doesn't make any kind of sense. And I really like Bitcoiners who are all into like, don't trust no third party. Yes, I don't trust no third party with my money. Why do I need to trust someone with my kids' education? That's third party as well. I like that a lot. So I would like to talk about how would Satoshi Nakamoto educate kids on money? Because I didn't learn shit about money in school. Not at all. When I discovered Bitcoin, I was like, oh my God, I'm so stupid. I don't know nothing. And I think it's meant to be like that, of course. But it's hard to educate yourself on money when you don't have no clue and you're falling into this rabbit hole and you're discovering lie after lie and you're like, am I crazy or is this gaslighting what is happening out there? So I changed that narrative for my son. He had a Bitcoin wallet before he had a bank account. He was building nodes and he was playing with Lightning transactions before he even had a proper sense of what money is. So for me, it was quite easy to educate him on decentralized finance or money, sound money, before he really went into that system money. So easy for me. But just general speaking, what do you think? How would Satoshi Nakamoto educate kids on finance and money?
Well, in my opinion, I think he would definitely start by making them understand that you need to own your money for you to have money. You know, if it's in somebody else's control, you have nothing. You know, you have the illusion of money. That's what I think he would teach. And you know, in the Bitcoin space, there's a lot of debate between custodial services and non-custodial services and all that. I'm not a fan of custodial services, but I do understand that some of them are required, at least in the short term, as a transition into like the perfect Bitcoin space. Okay. As a custodial, technically any custodial is able to take away the funds, you know, within their custody. That's why they're the custodial. Now, you don't want to automatically assume that everyone that's a custodial is a bad actor. They're not, by any stretch. A lot of, you know, custodial applications and software are extremely well designed. They work super, super well. That's not the issue. The issue with them is related to things that are not in their control. Okay, you have a custodial service. They get coerced, let's say, by a nefarious government organization, you know, forces them to do something. Obviously, they will not disclose that information to the end user, but the end user will discover it when they realize that their money is gone. You know, that's where the risk is, and that's where the heavy push towards self-custody becomes crucial. But again, it comes down to education. In the traditional educational system, you're never taught about money, and that's by design. Why would they teach you about the scam, about the Ponzi that was put together to keep you stuck in the system and enslaved? If they taught you how it worked, what idiot will stay? No one will stay, right? So it's by design to keep you clueless. And not only clueless, I mean, if you notice, the educational system teaches you to follow orders. You know, you go to school, you listen to the teacher, you do as you're told. And when you graduate, you get a job, you listen to your boss, you do as you're told, you take your money, you put it in the bank that somebody else owns and somebody else controls. And you go on just about your life, you know, being a good little puppy. And you'll be able to spend whatever money you have left after we take what we think you owe us from your hard work. Okay, that's the narrative being taught. So you are brainwashing almost, you know, individuals from a very young age to believe that this is the norm. This is how things work. But, and it worked. It worked for many years. So when you get to the point where things blow up in your face, then you're like, hold on a second. You start asking questions. It happened to me. It happened to many folks. And like I said, anyone that comes from pain is going to be extremely hard to revert back to the old ways, because then they're going to start, if they have any sense of common sense and logic, they will start asking questions. And it's not hard to start putting one and one together to understand what's really going on and finding solutions. Thankfully, we have something like Bitcoin. If we didn't, this conversation would be very different, because then we'd literally be stuck. You know, because what are your options? Gold, real estate, you know, these traditional safe havens that people, you know, flaunt as, you know, this is where all the value is. Yes, traditionally, those were much better giving returns that beat the rate of inflation. Yeah, but the rate of inflation now is uncontrollable, depending where you are in the world. And if you've been paying attention in the last 3 to 5 years, it's become very obvious that nothing physical is safe. And I've said this before, nothing physical is safe unless you have an army to protect it. So the argument, gold better than Bitcoin, real estate better than Bitcoin. How is it better than Bitcoin? Can you move it across space? No, you can't. If you have gold, where is it? Is it under your bed or is it in a bank somewhere? If it's in a bank somewhere, you don't control it. You pray to God that those individuals holding your gold don't screw you over. And that's not even in their control. That's the funny part. If they get coerced by a government, you're the one who's going to pay the price, not them. If you want to pay someone in gold, how are you going to do it? What, you're going to attach a gold bar to a pigeon and hope it reaches them? You know, like, how are you going to do it? If you travel with it, it's legally yours, right? You have gold. You get to the airport, it's instantly taken away from you on the assumption that you stole it. Good luck going through all the paperwork and the questions to prove that it's not yours. I've had a scenario. I'll tell you a funny story. This guy came up to me. I think it was his grandmother. Okay, she was saving money from a long time ago in a small box, you know, the small cardboard box, cash. She was saving it. Many years later, she kept saving it. She had like an amount of, I don't know, I think it was 50,000 or 60,000. All right. She gave it to him. He took it to the bank. Those were old notes, you know, that she never spent. They were legal notes, but they were old. They took it away from him. Okay. Same currency. But because his grandmother was saving it, she didn't have a bank account. She was doing it like the old school ways. You know, she was putting it in a little box, you know, for a rainy day. And then she got old and she passed away and she left it for him. So he took it. He's like, okay, so I'm going to take this money, put it in the bank. He gets to the bank. They took it away from him. Where'd you get this money from? This is illegal money. This is a whole bloody list of reasons as to why this money has been stolen, or it's coming from like a nefarious place. Okay. There you go. That's just one example that you don't hear of. But it happens. It happens a lot more than people realize it happens. It happens. Real estate. I know stories in Lebanon. People have real estate. A group of people come up to them with guns. Get the fuck out. What are you going to do? You're going to show them a piece of paper that says, look, legally it says my name. They're going to tell you, you have 10 seconds, my friend. Or we're going to carry you out. This is how it's going to play out. So some people might argue, this is an extreme scenario. It never happened here. Really? When things get bad enough, anything is possible. anything is possible. The people in Venezuela and Argentina, they didn't think things were going to get that bad either. And they were living a happy life. Some people had a lot of money. And them too, they went to bed one day, woke up the next, boom, it's gone. Did they think it was going to happen in their country? Absolutely not. So this delusion of thinking you live somewhere where you're safe, it's a suicidal delusion that, you know, some people hide behind, in my opinion, anyhow, because I've seen how things actually play out. I know they can play out. And the way things are going, it's not if, it's just when it gets to every city of every country, blah, 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 blah. And when it gets there, who knows what can happen? When people can't eat, even good people start doing bad things. Right? So, Bitcoin hopefully is the antidote to all of this. I think it is, because of its finite supply that no one can manipulate. You don't even need to own that much of it for it to potentially have a life-changing impact on you. That's how scarce it is. People in financially privileged countries take Bitcoin for granted, the way I see it, because, you know, they can go buy it from anywhere, whether it's a centralized exchange, whether it's peer-to-peer. You know, you can buy it. We buy it for ideological reasons. But there's another side of the world that's actually using it for the purpose that it was created, and that's to survive. You know, countries that have never had access to bank accounts, people that have never seen money in their entire lives, now own small businesses, now have savings that they know no one's going to steal from them. This is the value of Bitcoin, not number go up. The number go up is a side effect that's going to happen because of the finite supply. Fine. But Bitcoin was created to save lives, in my opinion, the way I see it, because I can see how these folks are using it. There was a recent documentary made on Cuba where the monthly salary of someone was $12. Can you imagine living on $12 a month? What can you possibly buy for 12 bucks? Eggs, one egg will probably cost more than 12 bucks soon here in the West. So imagine having a whole month on $12. What do you do? So what do you think they did? Now Bitcoin is on a surge over there because they're realizing that, hold on a second, this garbage money, I don't want to use it anymore. I'm going to use something that actually has value, that is accepted worldwide, and no one's going to steal from me, and appreciates in value. So the more people realize this, and I'm 100% sure it's going to continue happening, that's when the boom, the suddenly happens. And the way I see it, Bitcoin is such an important innovation that it'll cast a shadow over electricity and the internet combined, because it's linked to the one thing that is not optional in anyone's life: money. Send it anywhere, anytime, doesn't really matter. I don't need your permission. Regardless of the amount, costs me almost nothing. Life's good. That's how it's supposed to be.
I get a lot. Maybe we can talk about a bit why decentralized systems are such a scam or such a problem. Because what I see is you are creating the perfect slaves if you control the money and the education. Because if you don't educate them on money, it's easy to have scammy money. So this is a cycle and it's going on and on and on. And as soon as people drop out, they see it, they can't go back. That's for sure. But I think a lot of people out there who are not into Bitcoin yet, after this episode, maybe this is changing. But maybe we can talk about a bit about why decentralized systems are a huge problem. I see it for education like that. They tell you what is the truth and what you have to learn. And if you don't know that, you're stupid and you're like a failure for society. But I see it a bit different because this world is, and this life especially, has so many different facets. And I think a huge portion of what we are as human beings is ignored in school. So I think it is designed to press you into a kind of shape that they want you to have. And if you don't fit into that shape, you are a failure. And that's okay. But I think as soon as people wake up and see, okay, this is a problem of centralizing education. And if we decentralize education, we don't have this pressure. We don't have these expectations. And we have a wider range of what is acceptable to know, to learn, when to know, when to learn, and even if to skip. I like it because not everyone needs to know everything. I really believe that everyone has a purpose here on this planet. And maybe I don't need to know what happened 200 years ago in France. Maybe I just don't need that to be the kind of this kind of human being that I need to be. So I like the combination of finance and education because it's depending on each other. And I think it's influencing how we see these two sides of the story. What is your opinion on that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, fundamentally, it comes down to having a choice. You know, every individual is free to make their own choices, you know, whether it's education and whether it's money. When, you know, when you're pushing an ideology or a narrative, you know, onto people, I mean, sure, okay, you might influence some that have no opinion and have no, you know, desire to, you know, think on by themselves. That's fine. That's their choice, but it's their choice. But there are others that don't want to play by these rules, that want to be able to, you know, make their own decisions whenever they want, however they see fit. But again, within the mold of the law, you know, like no one's advocating for you know, a free for all of all sorts of criminal activities. That's not what this is about. But there are legitimate rules and laws in place that must be respected. But these law, for a law to be respected, in my opinion at least, it has to be neutral. It can't favor one over another. It doesn't matter who the individual is. They break that rule, they get punished. No exceptions. So as long as you play by these rules, then people, you know, are more inclined to respect them. But when it becomes abundantly clear that you can do this, but I can't do this, then I'm like, you know what? No, that's not how it's going to work. And then it escalates. And that's where you start having problems. So decentralization removes all of this. It destroys that mold, especially when it comes to money. This is why they have Bitcoin and shitcoin. All these crypto projects that tag in the word decentralized, none of them are decentralized. And how do you know the difference? It's very easy. If there's an individual behind the scenes making decisions, it's not decentralized. It's that simple. If there's an individual, a company, an institution, an organization, a bunch of people, it doesn't matter. If there's someone that you know is making decisions for that project, it's a shitcoin. It has absolutely nothing to do with decentralization. And this is where the value of the Satoshi's Vanishing Act comes into play. In the first beginning of Bitcoin, you know, like I said, if people were really paying attention, they could have killed it. But they didn't. And now it's too late. It's gone. He's either dead, gone, nobody knows, but he's gone. And the network is so vast and decentralized now that this is true decentralization. You can't fuck around with it anymore. Every node that comes online adds significantly to the decentralization and the strength of the entire Bitcoin ecosystem, right? So more and more people are doing this. More and more people are understanding what money really means. More and more people are taking action to ensure that their time and energy is saved properly. That's decentralization. And I think we're definitely headed into a decentralized future. I don't see the centralized model surviving for long. Now, obviously those in power do not want to lose that power, and they will likely do all sorts of insanity in order to, you know, hold on to whatever desperate, you know, little tidbits they have left. But ultimately they will fail, because, you know, nobody wants to live a life of a slave. At least most people don't. And when pushed enough, at some point, everyone's going to push back. You know, like, you can't bully someone forever. At some point, they're going to get fed up of you and take a baseball hammer to your face. You know, like, it's going to happen. And this is the way I see that the worse things get, expect, you know, it's not a single player. Life is not a single player game, right? It's a multiplayer game. You keep harassing me. At some point, I'm going to destroy you. That's, you know, however long that takes. Maybe I'm like a calm person, takes me longer, okay. But at some point, I'm going to get tired of you, and I'm going to push back. And this is what I think is going to happen globally. When things get progressively bad and people get impacted directly, because that's what it takes for you to do something, you start seeing a faster progression towards change.
That's cool. Before we started recording, we talked a bit about socializing of homeschooled, unschooled kids. And you said something quite interesting, because you yourself, you went to school, you weren't homeschooled or unschooled at all, but you traveled a lot. And a lot of people are always like, oh my God, how are you socializing your kid and these kind of things? And not to go too far from what we've been talking before, but I really like that point. And to talk to someone who experienced it, and who's now grown and obviously in their right mind. So you are not the social weirdo people expect you to be. And people always are like, oh my God, homeschooled kids, unschooled kids, how do they socialize? First of all, I think sitting in a classroom with 30 same aged group kids is not socializing, first of all. And secondly, I think socializing happens naturally, and I think the most beautiful part is that homeschooled, unschooled kids, world school kids do socialize with a wide range of not even same age, like different age groups, different groups in general, just all kinds of people. And I think you have a nice story to tell, so maybe some parents are like, okay, I'm not doing the wrong thing, and my kid is, I'm screwing up my kid because it's not socializing properly. I don't know if you want to share that, because I think it's very valuable.
Sure. I wasn't homeschooled, but as a kid, we traveled a lot because of just my parents, you know, life situation forced my dad to have to move a lot, to find work, you know, and to adapt to change and what have you. And so I never had the time to make any real connections with anyone, you know, since the age of 7 or 8. We'd stay in one place for about 6 months, maybe a year, and then we'd have to move. And so, you know, you land in the new place, and well, you know, the cycle starts over. You know, you go to a new school, new faces, new friends, you know, you meet them, you make connections, and then you have to move again. So I would say, like, in my lifetime, as a kid, I think we moved like 8 times, you know. So between 8 and, you know, until you reach your 20s, you know, there is no connection with anyone. But, you know, you don't realize it when you're young, but you realize it now that this is absolutely a good thing, because it builds character. It builds social skills that you may not develop otherwise, because, you know, you tend to, if you're in the same place for long, you get comfortable, you know, same people, same faces, same friends, you know, same routine, blah, blah, you know. But when you're forced to change, unless, you know, you want to live by yourself, which I didn't, you know, I'm a very social individual. So wherever I went, you know, just start to talk to people, make friends, you know, and grow connections that way. So, you know, technically, I know a lot of people, but to consider them like intimate friends, it's only a handful, simply because of circumstance. There's just no time, right? And that helps down the line. You know, it helps you adapt to change much easier. It helps you business-wise. You know, when you're dealing with people, you start seeing all sorts of individuals for who they are. You know, the psychology of, you know, the human interaction is accentuated because you've seen all sorts. You know, who's lying, you know, how they're lying, you know, who's fake, you know, who's real, you know, all that stuff becomes an instinctive gift that you have simply because, you know, you've interacted with so many from all parts of the world that you've subconsciously learned these things. And so I find that that's extremely valuable growing up, and it's not something you can learn. As far as education is concerned, well, depending where you live, you absolutely do not want to leave your kids in a system, you know, with all that garbage that they're teaching them. You absolutely, like, if you have any sense of value and tradition and, you know, love for family and unity and all that stuff, you get them, keep them as far away as possible from that, from that trash that, you know, is being forced upon people, unfortunately. Luckily, some folks, you know, are realizing this and are taking, you know, measures on their own to pull their kids out of school. Like, you know, like you said, you know, homeschool them, you know, teach them the right ways. Because otherwise, you know, what are they going to learn? They're going to learn hate. They're going to learn division. They're going to learn anything other than how to form a healthy bond with someone. And you absolutely don't want to encourage that if you have kids, that's for sure. I wouldn't want that for my kids. I'd never expose them to something like this, no matter what it took. You know, and anyone threatening that motto, well, you know, they're going to have to deal with me protecting, you know, what I care about. And I think every individual should take that position as well. You know, complying to bullshit, especially when you know it's bullshit, is a coward's move. So pick what kind of life, what kind of role model you want to be as a parent to your kids. It's your choice. I mean, you can pick whatever you choose, but just accept the results of your decision. So that's what I think about this. Yeah.
I like it a lot. Thank you so, so much. We are at the end of this episode, and I really hope that everyone who's listening is now already deeply into how do I buy my first Satoshis. I really hope. So I'm going to put all the links to your company and everything in the description, so it's easy access for everyone who's not already into Bitcoin to realize that adventure.
Absolutely. And one thing to note, I mean, we offer a free 30-minute call for anyone. If you just want to call, you know, ask questions, you know, find out a little bit more before you commit to anything, it's free. You know, book a free 30-minute call, and I'll speak to you. You know, we'll discuss anything you like, and we'll take it from there. Obviously, there's no commitment, no obligation. It's just a conversation, just to get people comfortable in the space, which is needed, you know, before moving any further with it. You know, everyone needs to understand what they're getting into and why, more importantly.
I love that. And when you buy your first couple of Satoshis, please send me some, because I accept donations in Bitcoin. And I would be super happy if more people are into sending little Satoshis back and forth, like little sums.
Absolutely.
Because it's the ultimate sign of love. When I wake up and I see, like, oh my God, I received 20 Satoshis. I mean, it's not a lot in fiat, but it's a lot of love in Bitcoin. So
absolutely.
Do that, please.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tipping, gifting Satoshis to someone is, I think, the ultimate sign of care and love, because you know, you are gifting them the only asset in the world that they truly own. As long as they take the right measures not to lose it themselves, you know, but that's a whole different conversation that we can get into, you know, when the time comes.
Thank you so, so much, Roily. Appreciate
it. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. So that felt like 2 seconds.
Yeah, it was nice.
lustig des Todes. Aber die haben da also Bescheid jetzt, ne? Und dann hat es so, das war so krass. Der Chef, der hat so andere Leute, nur man sieht sich halt, und dann verschwinden die Leute nacheinander. Aber guck mal, das eine, bei den anderen,